And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The race is on, and the Aston Martin AMR 21 broke cover today with what was the most revealing car launch yet. But what are its chances, and how are things going for the new Alpine, which made its on-track debut at Silverstone today? I'm Ed Straw, and joining me to discuss F1's rebranded teams are Gary Anderson and Scott Mitchell. Well, Gary, let's go straight into the obvious question. How would you rate the Alpine and the Aston Martin launches out of 10? I'm expecting a disparity here.
Not wrong, Ed. Very, very different. If the car performance is as good as the launch, then Aston Martin have definitely led the way. Everything was there. The car showed you around the car, the camera work. There was nothing, you know, hidden. Of course, there'd be developments, but nothing hidden. And again, the team, you know, the drivers, the Andrew Green, technical director, Otmar, and the man who pays the bills, all there. So, you know, they're all saying their bet. But, you know, it was a good car launch. And that's the important thing, say, yeah, a good car launch. Alpine didn't really come into that area at all with car launch, because what we saw was just, A, it was pretty bad, and B, you know, there was nothing shown. So, again, very, very different technology used in achieving it. So, yes, different world altogether.
Scott, did you enjoy the return of what we've talked about before, which is the Lawrence Stroll? Very, very natural on camera. I know he's not there to do that. He's done a great job with everything else, but he's not the most relaxed and natural, is he?
No, there was a video that he did last year around the whole brake duct scandal, copygate, whatever you want to call it, where not to obviously, I don't want to call it a genre, but not to belittle the genre, but it did look a little bit hostage video-ish, and that sort of returned again. Only very briefly, but yeah, obviously can't criticize him for a lot of things, can you? He's pulled out all the stops, and I think the launch was a good embodiment of just what that team's evolved into. I mean, we are here on this podcast with someone who launched that team, designed and launched that team's first car, which was obviously the 191's reveal was a world apart from what we saw with the AMR 21, wasn't it, Gary?
Yes, it was sitting in the corner of the workshop, Silverstone, or an empty workshop at Silverstone. Very, very different world altogether. But, you know, the thing about the 191 launch was, or the 911 launch as it was at that point in time, 911 as it was called at that time, you know, the car was complete. There was a few people there that actually doubted the fact that, you know, the way the front wing was, and I quite happily jumped on one side of it for them just to dispel any myths that it wasn't going to function. But yeah, the car was complete, as was the AMR 21 today. It was, you know, a complete car. So nice to see that. And it wasn't a hidden car. We didn't hide anything whenever we were releasing it either. So, yeah, very different world. But, you know, same end result.
But familiar, isn't it? A green car, the Silverstone team, Andrew Green there playing a key part in it. So it's just like old times for you.
It's just like old times. It's nice to see the team up there, you know, see some of the guys that are still there. Quite a lot of the mechanics are now, you know, workshop based or whatever. But in general, the trend through from 1990 to my last year there in 2003, you know, there's a lot of people still there. It's, you know, it's very good that way. So nice to see it. Nice to see that continuity. And they've worked hard. You know, they deserve the success that they're hopefully going to get through this time in their life. It's the first time they've had the stability really to look forward to try to set themselves up to move forward. And I just hope that they don't get pushed to try to achieve it too quickly, because it's not something that you can do. You know, you can have a good year for sure, but to actually build and plan and consistently have good results, that takes a bit of deep planning and structural you know, structural alignment, I suppose you might call it, to make sure it happens regularly. It's no, you know, flash in the pan is not what they need now. So let's make sure that they just get that opportunity to do it properly.
They seem to be being sensible, don't they, Scott? Because they talked about 3 to 5 years to be able to get to the World Championship contending level. And we saw lots of good things in place, lots of sponsors, the Cognizant deal, everything looking very good. So it does seem like there's some realism with the hype about the whole Aston Martin brand that they're really getting excited about.
Yeah, I think it's that optimism for the, well, even the short term, because obviously this became a race winning team last year, but it's that optimism of not slipping back in the short term and then building something in the medium term that medium to long term works out really well for the team. And there's that they will have a plan for that. Obviously a big part of that is going to be moving to the new factory, finally saying, well, not a total goodbye to the original Jordan workshop, but because that will be absorbed into their new sort of facilities. But the new factory at the end of 2022, and then, yeah, this 3 to 5 year plan of becoming a championship contender, being the most efficient team in the budget cap era is their aim. Obviously bringing in Sebastian Vettel to help spot some, you know, help them spot the gaps and work out where they need to fill. They're going to have the thing is they'll have the resources now to run at the budget cap and know that their rivals are going to be pegged back. And the AMR 21, which we've seen now, is it's the next step in that journey, but not in the sense that this is going to be what bridges the gap to Mercedes or anything like that, because it's very much a continuation. It's the green Mercedes now, isn't it, rather than the pink Mercedes. But everything that they're talking about is it's about doing things in iterations. And you have to say, since Stroll came in and took over this team, you know, saved it from administration when it was Force India, he's made good on every promise. They said that the 2019 car wouldn't be that special because it was a legacy of the problems of 2018. That's exactly what happened. But then they said that they would definitely come out the blocks with something quite creative in 2020, and they did, even if that creative thing was copying what someone else has done. And he then said we want it to be the Aston Works team. And I think what we saw today with the launch proved that, in the modern definition at least, this is the Aston Works team. This isn't Racing Point with a splash of green on it and claiming it's a different name. They are fully adopting that brand and identity. And little flashy things around the launch, like the celebrity involvement and even getting James Bond on camera as well. It just shows that they are really leaning into that heavily. And it is I know other teams are annoyed by them and other teams don't think this is really Aston Martin, and you can make a case either way for that. But this was the dawning of a new era, and it bodes extremely well for this team.
Well, I'm playing on that. As Lawrence Stroll explained, he's very excited to see No Time to Die, the new Bond film, as we all are. So that was good. But Gary, let's have a look at the car now. The big structural things, 2020 Mercedes rear end, and they spent their tokens on the monocoque design. Potentially, it looks like, for a tweak to the side impact structures to get the side pods a bit, now, or rather to the mounting of the structures, because the structures are a common structure.
Yeah, it looks like that. Obviously, we haven't just got the final detail of that. It'll be interesting to see what, you know, what part it is, but it does look like the side impact structures have moved, and that allows you to do the radiator inlets differently, and it's not such a big compromise because the top part of the radiator inlet is a fairly critical area for flow. It's very easy to get lift across that top surface, which obviously any lift you get there is contrary to creating downforce. But we don't know all of the detail of that, the token spend on the chassis, whether it's at the back of the chassis or the middle of the chassis. As I say, there are some visual differences there, but it's hard to know the detail of it. The 2020 Mercedes gearbox is obviously a major part. As Mercedes himself, you know, pointed out last year, the DAS steering was one thing, which obviously is gone for this year. And the rear suspension was the other big thing for them to open up that rear end to get more airflow in between the rear tire and the coke bottle area to reduce the blockage, I suppose, or reduce the early blockage, I think is the best way of putting it, because that's a sort of critical area to get the airflow to go through between there, as opposed to having it pressurized in front of the rear tire, which means if it's got positive pressure there, it will try to go underneath the floor of the car very much quicker because you've got a low pressure area underneath the car. So that you just, from a high pressure area to low pressure area, you get much more airflow passing than you would do if you've got two low pressure areas. So by reducing the blockage there, more airflow will go in through that area over the top of the diffuser, which helps the diffuser work better. But it will also mean that the pressure differential across the floor is a bit less. So there's less flow going underneath the floor, again, helping the diffuser work a bit better. So that, from my point of view, is a good step with these new regulations of this floor, a bigger step than it would have been for last year's car relative to 2019, I suppose you might call it, when the floor regulations stayed the same. So I think that definitely Aston Martin will benefit from that dramatically changed from 2020 to 2021. Whereas obviously Mercedes have just got the same component as they had last year, so they won't get as big a benefit. They had their big benefit last year. So it'll be interesting to see. We could have, you know, a bit of competition within the Mercedes teams. You know, we keep on looking around for somebody to be competitive with them, and it might be themselves that's going to hurt themselves. So that would be an interesting scenario, wouldn't it?
But that's exactly what they're aiming for, isn't it? I mean, speaking to Andy Green, he is convinced that even with a customer model and as the Mercedes customer, this era of F1 that's coming in is an opportunity to beat your supplier, because it's about, as he puts it, I think the way he described it was, you know, removing the noise of having to worry about gearboxes and gearbox casings and stuff like that. They can focus on doing what they're good at, which is obviously they're now going to have added resources to do that job even better, doing a better job with aerodynamics, doing a better job with mechanical understandings of the car. It's a little bit like a much more advanced version of where Williams is trying to get to. That's basically what Williams is trying to do in its new era. So Aston's adamant that the model that they've got can be a success. And yeah, obviously, I think it would be stunning to look back on the 2021 season and say, I can't believe Aston Martin were able to fight Mercedes over the course of the year. But this is obviously about a much bigger thing than 2021, which is why, again, they've made such a big song and dance of the Aston thing, because it's about so much more than one new car and one new livery.
Well, 22, the development, that's the big thing for them, isn't it? But it's great to see that we have actually seen evidence of evolution. There's a lot of detail changes aerodynamically. That's always interesting, isn't it, Gary? It's not necessarily so much how they've changed it, but just that it's just tidier, and it just looks like there's more effort has been able to go into just all these little tiny things that add up.
Yeah, they do add up. I mean, that is the thing with the regulations the way they currently are for 2021. It's about attention to detail. Every little detail will help you. It's some of all of those that actually ends up giving you the total improvement. So, you know, there is no revolution within the 2021 cars. There is nothing you can do to think, oh, here we go. You know, we'll really get excited about this bit and do something completely different. You know, the barge boards have been invented. The diffusers have been invented. It's just adapting to those small changes in aerodynamics. They're small changes theoretically, but they're actually big changes performance-wise. So adapting to that, which the teams have all got the same tools, the wind tunnel tools, CFD tools, the knowledge. It's not it's not completely different. It's not like we're getting for 2022. You know, it's not completely different. It's a slight change on what they already understand. So all the functionality of all the componentry on the car is going to be doing the same things. You just change the priorities a little bit as to how they operate, whether they operate more for the front corner of the floor or they operate more for the back corner of the floor. So it's not a complete, you don't have to go away and scratch your head and think about how I'm going to do this. It's just a continuation of what you had before, doing it a little bit differently. So all those small details, I say, for every team are very, very important. And what I saw with the Aston Martin today, it looks like they've attacked all those small details. You know, you just look at the bulge on the engine cover on the Mercedes relative to the bulge on the engine cover on the Aston Martin. You know, they've either got a bigger bit inside there they have to cover, or they've covered it a bit tighter. And that means it's the bulge shows a bit more on that side of the engine cover. Love to know what's in there, but obviously it's something that has to be cleared. And I wouldn't be surprised if it was the plenums dropping down a little bit lower. You know, again, the detail of that means the center of gravity is going to be a little bit lower. So all of these things are positive. But as I say, the Aston Martin definitely is clothed a bit tighter than the Mercedes for the same engine unit, engine package. So that's all great detail. Again, as I said in my article, or you'll see in my article, it just needs to make sure the cooling's okay because, you know, that's a critical area that you can often miss a little bit. But I don't expect Aston Martin to miss the cooling on the car. I think they're one of the things they were pretty good at was maintaining a good level of performance relative to cooling.
The big thing that I've taken away from this launch, and I think all the stuff that you were sort of able to reference there, Gary, and have talked about so far, is the depth and breadth of imagery that we've had of this car has dwarfed anything that any other team has put out, and it's all been relevant to what looks like the genuine 2021 car as well. I'm sure this is the launch version and there will be iterations that we see.
Yep.
But even little things like Mercedes obviously made it very, they were secretive but openly secretive because they said, you know, we're not going to show you what we've done at the back of the floor because then that gives other teams a couple of weeks to work it out. But I don't think I'm making this up, but it looked like this was the first time we saw like proper detail at the back of the floor where the rules have changed. And, you know, Andy Green was saying that for all, obviously there is, as you were explaining, Gary, this so much similarity with last year. Andy Green was at pains to point out how much work has gone into just making sure they don't get tripped up by this, by the floor changes. And he's saying, you know, that the rear suspension of the Merc, or the rear end of the Merc for 2020, introducing that is one of the main areas, but the other ones are these four aero changes. So he was so keen to sort of not deflect attention, but just to bring attention to the fact that that is something that they've worked really hard on. And just to actually see elements of that, details of that, was so refreshing after this sort of hidden launch season we've had so far.
And Gary, what do you make of the floors? Do you think that that's kind of a pucker 21 floor with the kind of detail, or do you think Aston have got a more detailed one they're going to bolt on?
I would be surprised if there wasn't something in the pipeline. I would think that it's probably a reasonable solution at this point in time, what we're seeing there. But I would be surprised if there wasn't more complex turning vane packages coming for that area. It's just about trying to stop the tire. Obviously, there's a big high pressure point builds up in front of that tire. If you saw a CFD analysis, it's, you know, in front of that rear tire is a big high pressure point, and you're trying to get that to pass around either the outside of the floor if you can, but that's limited now with the generation of the vortex that seals the floor. If it goes underneath the floor, it just destroys the diffuser, reduces the diffuser performance. So you're trying to get that to go down the cook bottle area between the wheel and the bodywork. So that's really the objective. And the work on the rear brake ducts, which we haven't really seen in detail in any car because it's a really complicated little area to get a camera in there, that will be part of that as well. And that's a slightly different learning curve because the brake duct on the rear of the car isn't really a brake duct. It's a mounting device for a load of turning vanes. And as James Allison himself said, you know, those turning vanes do give you some downforce in their own right. And that downforce is really important because it's directly onto the tire. It doesn't have the lag of going through the suspension. You know, whenever you watch the car moving up and down, there's a lag. If the car's on the way up, the downforce is reduced dramatically. If the car's on the way down, the load on the tire is increased dramatically. So that's a change on that load path that the driver feels quite dramatically. But the turning vanes on the rear brake ducts are a constant. They're pushing on the contact patch, so there's no lag in it. So that's a very critical area, and that's an area where there'll be a lot more development, unseen development yet. So those little turning vanes on the floor, the turning vanes on the brake ducts, are going to be quite critical to consistency of downforce into the rear tire. So we just have to let the boffins get on with finding the best solution, and I'm sure we'll see changes on every car.
The other thing that's encouraging there as well is new driver in Sebastian Vettel. He had a press conference earlier today where he seems quite at home. He was saying how kind of welcoming the team had been. So I'm hoping we'll see that the best of him this year. I did actually ask him if he felt he was going to have the car to allow him to show his best form rather than what I did describe his last year performance as substandard, which he said was very flattering. He thanked me for that that comment, but we know how good he can be, and he wasn't that last year. But I think this could be really positive, and he could have a great influence on Lance Stroll as well. So I'm really interested. That's the driver pairing that could go so much one way or the other, and I really hope it's positive. But we should briefly talk about Alpine. Not such a great launch, but let's just quickly, Scott, get you to clarify what exactly is going on with the team management. We've talked about this before, and they've sort of clarified it.
Yeah, basically, they don't have a team principal, and they won't have a team principal. The role will be, the responsibilities, rather, will be split between executive director Marcin Barkowski, who, to all intents and purposes, is the team boss overseeing the, especially what's going on at Enstone and Viri. We know that he's been a key part of managing the expansion at Enstone and just bringing that up to standard properly over the last couple of years since his arrival. And Davide Brivio, who's obviously been recruited from winning the MotoGP title with Suzuki last year, Davide will be racing director, and that basically means running the trackside part of the team, so he'll be in charge of everything that happens at the circuit. I did wonder initially if that basically just made Brivio a sort of glorified team manager, but the team manager's position is very different and is very, very important, so I wouldn't want to belittle it. I think he's going to bring a lot of experience from managing people is what he's said to have been most effective at, and just super skilled people person, just able to bring together different cultures and different personalities. He will need that and then some at Alpine, given the variety of people involved, not least obviously Fernando Alonso, who Brivio has described yesterday as intense, but Brivio likes that. He says, you know, this team needs a driver that's basically going to kick him up the backside. But I can see there being some logic to it. You've got someone who is a devoted trackside person, goes to every single race, and then you've got someone who is good at management, not managing people necessarily, not to say that Budkowski isn't, but managing departments and managing a company. He then runs the show back at base and goes to races as and when he's needed to. So I can sort of see the logic, but where it falls down to me is that this means that the buck stops with the new Alpine CEO, Laurent Rossi. I don't want to do him a disservice, but I don't know what he knows about F1, let alone running a Formula One team. So if that means that Brivio and Budkowski are on the same level, which they must be because they're both reporting to Rossi, so that suggests that in the hierarchy they're on the same plane, then where does the buck stops with Rossi, but he doesn't really know the best way to make the decisions. It doesn't really make sense to me, but Gary's got a lot more experience of working in F1 teams than I do. Would you have been happy being technical director of a team without a team principal, Gary?
Just to interrupt on that, you had something not a million miles from that when you went back to Jordan, didn't you? Because you were kind of head of making it work at the track, and there was a separate technical director.
Yes, it was a bit different. But, you know, I would say that my return to Jordan was that I was sort of racing director, whatever you like to call it. I was sort of going to take on the charge of what was happening at the circuit. Because, you know, as I say, technical director being heavily involved at the circuit and being heavily involved back at base, a bit like Binotto at Ferrari at the minute, it's a very difficult thing because, you know, there's a gray area that comes between the two of them, that, that, you know, the track might not get the best out of the car. The car design might not allow the best to be got out of the car. So I think the best solution for me is to have a technical director that's responsible for the design of the car and a racing director who's responsible for the actions at the track. And the fact of being very open with each other to the fact of whether you got the best out of the car on a given weekend or whether the car's design or characteristics are limiting your performance. So yes, we had that sort of situation, but we also had on top of that then a sort of consultant managing director, which made it even more grey at Jordan. He was there when I left, and he was there when I came back, not for much longer after that, to be honest. But it was one of those sort of situations where it was too clouded. People were able to hide behind each other too much. And I think, you know, in the Alpine thing, I see that now, the same sort of deal. You know, it's a very difficult thing if you start hiding behind each other a little bit, blaming each other. And, you know, when I stopped doing Formula One with Jordan, I did a little bit of consultancy with Honda at Brackley, which is now the Mercedes thing. And that was one of the biggest problems they had as well. You went in there and had a chat with a few of them just to see what was going on. And everybody was trying to blame everybody else. And that's really where Mercedes have sort of set the standard, with hopefully what they say being true as far as making sure that you have a no-blame culture. Everybody can have their input. At the end of the day, there's people there that are going to make the choices of direction. And as I say, Mercedes do that better than anybody else. And I think that Renault have failed to sort of realise that. They've probably gone the opposite direction. And it's all clouded with people that either are new into Formula One, like the guy from Suzuki, or they are, you know, not being involved in motorsport really at all. And it's, that makes it very, very difficult to find that channel of direction and find that opening an opportunity for input to be had by all, because you just don't know who you're working for.
Well, before we finish off with Gary's appraisal of the car, Scott, it's worth just a quick talk about the engine, isn't it? Because they talked a little bit about future engines and also how much of a step they've made this year, because Mercedes, Scott, talked about how much they've done, and we know how much Honda have done. So where does Renault stand in all of this?
Well, it is... Obviously, I don't know exactly where all four engine manufacturers ended up last year, but I think they might be at risk of falling to the back of the pile, just purely because there's been a change in timeline with everything that they've wanted to do. And essentially, the 2021 engine is the upgraded engine they would have had in 2020, which means they're behind schedule, because Honda and Mercedes brought an upgraded engine to Austria. So what was going to be their first upgrade or second upgrade in 2020 ended up being the engine they ran the 2020 season with. And they have subsequently upgraded those engines again for 2021. Renault didn't introduce an upgraded engine for the eventual start of the season in Austria last year. And they're only now introducing that upgrade. So if you see what I mean, they're... Unless they were planning an absolutely mega in-season development on the engine last year, they're not going to make the same step as everybody else. But the trade-off for that is they have basically postponed a much bigger engine change for 2022, which is almost certainly going to be a change in concept, probably to the Mercedes split turbo and compressor, which is very significant. And that also incorporates a pair of updates. They were originally going, when they postponed the new engine to 2022, they were going to introduce the new concept and then upgrade it again in 2023. Because of the early engine freeze, they can't do that. So now everything's being packed into 2022. So bodes sort of better for them in the long term. But the way I read that situation, I don't expect massive progress this year. And obviously we know that Ferrari is on the recovery curve after its dismal year last year. And Honda's obviously building this all new engine that is brought forward from 2022 for Red Bull. So, and obviously Mercedes isn't going to go backwards, is it? So I don't really see Renault being at the top of the power stake, shall we say.
Well, then moving on from that, let's have a look at the car, Gary. Now, we saw a few launch shots. The car has run successfully today at Silverstone in the hands of Esteban Ocon. They said it was quite an uneventful filming day, which is great. That's exactly what you want on a shakedown. But we haven't really seen the details. So what have you been able to glean from what we've seen of the Alpine car so far?
Well, it's exactly as you say, Ed. We weren't really able to see the details. You know, the car wasn't really part of the launch. There were some pictures there, pretty bad pictures. And it's a lovely colour scheme. I like the colour scheme personally. I think it'll stand out quite well on TV. But it's also a confusing colour scheme because it's very difficult to see things. If you just take the general principles, you know, if you look at, I suppose, Red Bull, and you look at Mercedes, and you look at the Aston Martin today, you know, the side pod detail relative to the Alpine side pod detail, it's a different dimension. You know, they've got a much bigger Coke bottle down the bottom section, but the other two teams really, you know, just cling wrap the bodywork, the radiators, and all that sort of detail inside of there. So either Renault for their engine, which is obviously in the Alpine, need more cooling, bigger radiators. There's something restricting them from really getting that close wrapping around the radiator and then moving the sort of cross-sectional area, the biggest cross-sectional area, as far forward as possible. If you took these cars and sliced them crosswise, you know, laterally, all the way through the car, you know, you can't magically change the airflow volume change as you go back through the car. You want to try and change that cross-sectional area as sort of smoothly as possible, so the airflow has an opportunity to stay attached to the surfaces and go around all those other bits. So if you chop the car across the rear axle, you've got the two wheels and you've got the gearbox section and the bodywork around that gearbox section. And if you chop the car up through where the driver sits, you've got the radiators and you've got the driver cockpit area, all that sort of stuff. Those two cross-sectional areas don't want to be that dramatically different from each other. Because, you know, that airflow, it's like a dolphin swimming through water. You know, it doesn't have quick changes of section. And a racing car, because it's got extra bits here and there, it has to be the same, really. Otherwise, the airflow is going to go everywhere. So there's basic principles. And, you know, I'm not sure that the Alpine has been able to, for some reason, exploit those basic principles as far as they should do. We'll see. You know, we're, what, just over a week away from the cars turning their wheels in Bahrain. A lot of work to do before that, but we are just, you know, just over a week away. So the only time we'll ever know is when testing begins, and it'll be interesting to see who has done what. Again, even after testing, we won't know, you know, before we get to the first race. But I didn't see anything on the Alpine that I thought was taking it a step forward from last year. I'm sure there is small details, but I didn't see that step change.
Yeah, we saw a few little details like the integration of the nose to the K, but it all just seems sort of fiddling, doesn't it? It's a little bit worrying because Alpine, it's got so much potential because it is a full works team. So we keep hoping it'll get there, but then you compare it to Aston Martin, you can't help but do it as an unfavourable comparison, not least because Alpine seemed to struggle even with their internet bandwidth when it came to broadcasting their launch live.
Yeah, I mean, again, all of the teams right through from the front to the back will have done those small detail changes because they have a car and the regulations have stayed relatively simple. So there's lots of areas on the car where you'll be looking at small detail changes just to tidy it all up and optimize it. But, you know, what you see of Aston Martin today, they've done those small detail changes plus quite a substantial amount more. And, you know, obviously we've got McLaren, which we keep not mentioning really much, but, you know, they've got the big advantage of moving on to the Mercedes power unit. But again, you know, I haven't really looked at the McLaren in detail since then, but I didn't see their bulges on the bodywork to clear whatever it is that the engine requires clearing for. So maybe their bodywork is, you know, a bit bigger. They got bitten with that zero bodywork size with the Honda, so maybe they're reluctant to go to a zero bodywork size. But, you know, obviously there's different avenues and different ways of doing stuff. But yeah, the Aston Martin, to me, again, I'm a little bit biased because, you know, a lot of the people there are from, you know, the past, you know, nice guys and guys that I worked with and hopefully brought into Formula One. But I did think it was an impressive little package, lots of detail on it. lots of solid detail, lots of good reasons for going in certain directions. And, you know, I think they've done a good job.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the two teams get on, but Aston Martin certainly grabbing most of the headlines. Well, thanks very much, Gary Anderson and Scott Mitchell, for your insights. We'll be back probably on Friday with a look at the new Williams. There is a Haas launch on Thursday, but that's basically a livery launch, so there's not going to be a great deal to talk about car-wise when it comes to that. Do head to therace.com and don't forget the hyphen. Loads to read there, including Gary's analysis of the two cars. And also check out our YouTube channel. Just search for The Race. And of course, sister podcast title, Bring Back V10s. Thanks very much. Join us on Friday for everything you need to know about the Williams.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.